Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Lee Titus. I'm chief of the village of Northway. I'm going to speak on in opposition of this resolution. As far as I know, everybody's been asking for equal rights and equal access to the resources in this state. Without regards to the indigenous people, the native people who lives out in the rural areas. The current system that the state now runs under is not an adequate system in which to resolve these problems. The majority of the decisions that are made in legislature in Juneau are made by representatives and senators from either Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Juneau who live in an urban area. The majority of the senators and representatives in this who makes laws pertaining to the state of Alaska do not know nothing about how we make a living in the rural areas. They all say that we should have equal rights and equal access. How long has the state been operating as a state without any effect to the people living in the rural areas as far as providing services, as far as providing an alcohol-free community, as far as providing equal funding in education? How long have we Native people coming down here to Juneau year after year, ever since the state became a state, asking for clean water, sanitation? Majority of the rural communities in the state do not have adequate water and sanitation facilities in their community. Where the hell has the state been all these years? Therefore, I oppose this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Titus. Back to Fairbanks, Jamie Cox.
Prior to Anelka, prior to the 40 Mile Land policy, well, that was approved by Congress in 1983, but see, that policy didn't, that management plan did not include rural residents. We were forced to come to town and to live, and now I reside in Two Rivers. We still try to mine though, we're having a hard time with them. I don't have an ad allotment. Neither does my husband. We don't get money monthly or yearly. So we can't just go, there's no homesteading. We can't go out in rural areas and live like we would prefer. We're forced to come and live here. For the benefit of the other people who seem to be misguided by Anelka, I don't know how many of you have ever read Anelka, but I have read it. I've read it several times. I'm sure I'll read it many more times. Anelka does not protect subsistence users. Anelka unjustly protects rural users, whether they're subsistence users or not. So let's make sure that's clear. I have five children. I'd like to know what about their lifestyle. I'm not going to, whether it's lawful or not, deprive them of the lessons of being responsible for themselves and taking care of themselves. I won't do it. I won't do it. They're going to learn, as they have learned, how to hunt caribou and how to skin them out and how to gut them and how to work the meat down and how to cook it up. That's all there is to it. I support subsistence. I don't support rural priorities. I don't think that this discussion can properly take place without public assistance and federal money being thrown into this equation. Mr. Nagyag, Mr. Jimmy, the elders seem to speak with so much more knowledge and so much more sincerity. They speak with dignity and they demand and require respect, not because they want it, but because of the nature of the way they are. They speak with much less hostility than the younger people. And I appreciate that. And this is hard because I have a great deal of respect for the Native culture and I don't want to lose it. And why they claim that they have to have special rights to preserve their culture makes no sense to me. They can go out and work and preserve their culture. They don't have to have special rights to do that. I'm not a sports-minded group. I'm not a special interest. I, too, am a sovereign person. I'm not wealthy. I don't invest in a lot of fancy hunting equipment. My hunting equipment is our regular old stuff. It's our old, it's our rifle, and it's about an 18-foot river boat with an old 50-horsepower Merc. I have to go out there, and I understand how people feel. When we lived on the 40-mile river, and people used to come up that live on the Stickeen or wherever, we'd say, gee, why are they coming out here? There's not very many moose. We've got to hunt our moose in our yard for it. But that's the way it is. You know, but you people that want to go around talking about that, all of us that are supporting SJR 19 as being special interests and having fancy hunting equipment are wrong. You're wrong. I don't hang anything on my wall either, by the way. Now, about public assistance being thrown into this equation. If the rural or native folks truly want sovereignty, they need to try to work things out amongst themselves and with the rest of us. They can't continually be asking the feds for everything. Somebody mentioned native views. Well, sovereignty means being independent, free, responsible for yourself. Somebody else mentioned dependent upon natural resources. Well, how many people in these villages, I know Eagle, I know if it wasn't for food stamps, the people on Eagle, many of them, would not be eating. Now, how many of these people in these villages, I would really like to see these figures, are willing to give up? How many are living in BIA-funded housing? How many people in these villages that are claiming a subsistence lifestyle have accepted food stamps in the past? Now, I know the Moses and very eloquently expressed that they never accepted it and that there are some people out here there who haven't, but there are many, many who have. And maybe we should throw that into the equation, that if you're not willing to get off the dole, then you lose your credibility by accepting all these things, which know, you guys won't get my sympathy as long as you're accepting money from the federal dole. But I'm going to continue to fight and to try to fight for my right to live in the area and the lifestyle I want to live too. And I think everybody has that choice, but I can tell you the feds have a very sorry record of mismanagement, at least of the land. My friend from Pilot Station, a very dear friend that lives near me in Two Rivers, you know, when the fish run collapsed, her family was hurting. They didn't have enough fish. But is she grew up in Pilot Station. Is she, because she lives in Two Rivers, to be denied subsistence use of the resources? She grew up on it. She's raising her family on it. She's married to a white guy. Big deal. You know? Big deal. But I'll tell you, if we had game ranching, then I'd be sure there'd be a moose in my backyard. Raise it and eat it. But before we divide the people, I think we ought to restrict more of the commercial uses, the non-resident fishing and hunting, including military, and maybe particularly military. I can tell you right now, in that 40-mile country, you go out there, and the GIs go out there, and they just even last fall, I mean, there's caribou laying around the road, rotten. Think about it. Get off the dole, or don't talk to us about tradition and culture. Thank you. Jane Pop.
Thanks for your testimony, Scott. Next in Fairbanks, Curtis May, and then George Yaska. Either gentleman here.
Very good. Yeah.
Okay, we're going on to page 6 of 6, unless you have more in the back. More in the back, okay? We have an hour and 15 minutes left, and I think we'll make it unless that list in the back is really long. Rick Zoli? I'm here earlier. We'll come back if there's your call mail. Louise McManus? Paul's coming? Okay, Louise McManus is standing by. You'll be next.
My name is Paul McNeil. I am an office shareholder, and I'm also vice president of Otten Incorporated. I apologize that Roy Yuan could not be here this morning. My comments are brief since I did not prepare to speak until this afternoon. I'm young and I hope that I do not sound half hot though. The Otten people are against SJR 19. We do not want or need to amend ANILCA. Katie John of the Otten people has fought a lifelong battle to feed her children and grandchildren. This battle began with the Russians and continues today. I don't know much about subsistence, but here's an example from my past. My parents killed a moose when I was a child, but I did not understand why they had to hide the moose. My parents got the moose because we were out of food and my dad was out of work. That's the only thing I know about subsistence. Subsistence is survival, not a sport hobby. I'm not well versed in subsistence litigation. I would appreciate it if the committee did not give me a clear letter. Okay. Today, I do not rely on subsistence, but I know many people that do. And I finally agree with Melinda Chase from ANVIC. Shame on you, Beverly Mastic.
Thank you, Paul. Louise McManus and then Amanda Alden.
I'm Louise McManus. I live here in Fairbanks and have done for almost 41 years. I'm the official delegate of the Interior Alaska Air Boaters Association and the Interior Branch of the Alaska Boating Association. We regard the subsistence provisions of ANILCA in general as illegitimate and unconstitutional. As to efforts to exchange the federal takeover of fish and game management to state and private lands, it seems quite clear that this is a case of federal regulatory agencies abusing the intent of Congress and violating the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution and violating the Statehood Compact. This is a straightforward states' rights issue, one of many areas in which an unconstitutionally bloated federal government is trampling local self-government, especially in Alaska. Most Alaskans recognize the value of a subsistence or semi-subsistence lifestyle for all Alaskans, and I'm sure we can protect the opportunity ourselves. I would like to point out that the whole subsistence controversy between Alaskans arises only because of temporary shortages of some species of game or fish in some areas. These shortages of game are artificially maintained by outsiders who will not let us manage our own game appropriately. Given a reasonable degree of predator control when required, there would be no shortage of moose or caribou anywhere. We Alaskans need to work out our problems amongst ourselves and move into the future as one people, Alaskans. And I would like to add my own personal comments. These are comments from the organization. My great-great-grandmother came over the Trail of Tears. My father came to Alaska in the early days, not to rape and pillage, but to work and build for his family and his community. One of my grandchildren is half Aleut. I have two nephews in Barrow, and their grandfather, Roy Amar, was a very dear friend. So I do know something about Nome culture. And I lived in Nome. I know a little bit about the native or village lifestyle. I'm a mother and grandmother of Alaskans, and I consider them to be native Alaskans. They were born here. They have never lived anyplace else in their lives. My children played with Senator Lincoln's siblings when they were young. I fished for tomcod, hunted for moose and ptarmigan and caribou, not for trophies, but for food on the table. Am I different from any mother or grandmother from Nulato or Alataka, Grand Park? I made parkas for my kids just like any village woman. When I lived in Nome, I worked for the MC store and the 1st Scout Battalion. But we depended on ptarmigan and caribou for our winter food, just as much as any other family on the Seward Peninsula. The Constitution of the State of Alaska was not written to deprive me of a semi-subsistence lifestyle. The Constitution states the resources of the state are for the use of all the people. And I would like to urge you to pass this bill.
You and I have something in common. I fished for halibut, but too often I caught tomcod. Senator Lincoln.
Destroy a people, or you can leave it and go on.
opportunity to testify today on the services issue. My name is Amanda Alton, and I'm a senior at Lakehead High School. I live at 1426 Fort Evans. Though I have never lived in a rural area, I have lived in Alaska for 17 years, and am concerned about issues concerning the state and its people. I'm strongly opposed to Senate Joint Resolution 19 regarding an amendment to the Federal Act on ELCA. While equal rights of all Alaskans to the state's fishing game may seem ideal, our Constitution disregards the fact that to many Native people, the subsistence issue is not only one of economic need, but a vital aspect of the Native culture and way of life as well. Denying rural residents subsistence preference seriously threatens their financial means of survival and their ability to raise their children stable. Those of us who live in the urban areas of Alaska do not depend on subsistence hunting and fishing to feed our families. We live in areas where jobs are available and the safe way is just down the road. Many villages have very few job opportunities, and the people hunt and fish as a way of survival, not just as a fun thing to do on the weekends. Yet the subsistence issue is not limited to a discussion of finances and economic issues. That would make it too simple. Subsistence lifestyle is just that, a lifestyle, a way of life, and a culture. The large majority of village residents are Native, and the subsistence lifestyle is an integral part of the Native heritage and cultural background. Native groups in Alaska have suffered great hardships and losses at the hands of the whites who felt that they were helping them by stripping them of their culture. The alcoholism rate among Native people is astronomical, and fewer and fewer Native youth are learning the traditional languages and ways of life. Native Alaskans are slowly but steadily losing their cultural background and heritage as a result of those Alaskans who feel assimilation of Natives into white society is the best thing for them. Denying a rural preference for subsistence hunting and fishing denies Native Alaskans yet one more vital aspect of their heritage, forcing them one step closer to losing their ethnic pride and cultural heritage completely.
Ms. Alton, do you read all that into SDR 19? Have you read the resolution, and do you read this denial of rights into that resolution?
I feel that Anelka preserves and is very important to the culture in Alaska, and that it protects the subsistence rights for Native law, and changing it, amending it.
Amending it to define what public lands means, so we can maintain state management. Be wrong, and it would always say, just listen.
I guess.
Thanks for joining us. It's a very great thing for high school students to come and testify before us.
Okay, thank you.
Carl Eflin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Carl Eklund. I live at 2497 Steese Highway, and I'm also a senior at Laser High School, and I believe I'm the last kid you have to hear today. I'm not Native, nor have I ever visited a Native community, but neither am I a sport hunter or the son of a sport hunter, which might affect my view of this issue. But our class has done fairly extensive research on Anelka and the subsistence issue, and I feel that I do know something about it. And I respect the idea to try to reclaim state's management of our land, but in the same step, I believe we would be putting the Native and rural preference in jeopardy. So I do not support Resolution 19. I believe it is easy for those of us who live in urban areas of Alaska and rely on a market economy to think that these indigenous peoples do not truly rely on a subsistence lifestyle, but I don't think we should let ourselves be deceived. Yesterday, our class spoke with George Yaska, and I came to realize that resources are limited in a very real way, and that there's a need for protection and assurance of the accessibility of these resources for the Native people and their subsistence lifestyle. These people who have lived here in Alaska for a long time States of America and its citizens have settled in Alaska alongside the natives, not always with complete respect to those natives' sovereignty and power. I believe we have a responsibility to make our entrance gently and with an open mind. Everyone, I believe, wants this state to be united in thought and action, but we have to give room for differences in governments and lifestyles. There is no need to pressure these people into our own way of life by making everyone the same, which is often called equality, which I believe is an obvious misnomer. The natives have had their land taken from them. Their governments have been altered. We try to pressure them into our form of government, which they are not familiar with, though have adapted very well. We placed on them our system of economics through the regional corporations, and which I believe they have managed in a praiseworthy manner, but considering that they've never had to operate such tools of economy and government and have had little training to do so. Now I believe we are attempting indirectly to destroy the remains of this lifestyle through forcing them into competition with the urban sport hunters. I see that this resolution is attempting to reclaim our rights as a state, but I believe we are ignoring the needs of those in the state who rely on the subsistence lifestyle, and we're ignoring our responsibility to these people as citizens. In conclusion, I would ask that though I'm only 17 and therefore have realistically only a minimal voice in the government or state, you would consider this issue with an open mind. Please do not allow this resolution, SGR 19, to reach the U.S. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eklund. You were here earlier today when we gave a hand to the other spinning laser students.
Yes,
I was. Well, that hand also goes to you and to Saul. Thank you very much for testifying.
Yes,
Fairbanks, Alaska, now residing here and retired. I would like you to support Senate Joint Resolution 19. I support equality. I would also ask you to please support the Alaska Constitution as it is presently written. I have lived in the bush when I first came to Alaska, hitchhiked up here, and had a gross income, literally gross, of $700 and some in my first 13 months in Alaska. Of which 500 was made in the first, or in 1 month while I was doing some assessment work. I have lived off the land, and I know how hard that is. However, I think that the people out in the bush will always take care of themselves. When the hunting seasons were in the sport hunter's favor, what I mean by that is done in August, the people that I know, and including myself, is probably putting myself into trouble here. We would make sure that we would get our fair share of the game after it was time to keep it all. I mean, we took everything. We didn't except the horns. I never packed any horns out because my old-timer Klondiker friend that I was living with at the time said horns make soup. One thing, presently living as a retired person here in Alaska, I have a 1.3 acres of land to try to protect, which I do, keep it as pristine as I can for the squirrels and red bulls and such that pass through. But I'm paying a pretty good price on the tax right now. I do see where eventually I may have to move out into the bush somewhere because they're going to tax me out of house and home being on a fixed income. I wish I had 44 million acres that are tax-free presently, as I understand it, that the regional corporations have to take and do my subsistence hunting on. I think that's being overlooked. And if I have seen it in the newspapers also, that if you happen to catch some of the ads of the regional corporations and lesser entities, they say, stay off our land. This is private property, no hunting. So way to continue the either whether it's the native lifestyle or the rural lifestyle by having access to those 44 million acres, which I don't at this particular time. They need to talk to their corporation people if they're not getting access to that land. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strachan. Doug Garrett and McMahon's standby. You're next.
Georgiana, Senator Lincoln, and gentlemen, appreciate your coming up here today. I had a few notes on here as I was listening to some of this other testimony, because there's that there are a lot of us that have a lot more in common than we seem to realize until we sit down and start talking. I came up here from the Assiniboine Sioux Indian Reservation, the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana. My grandmother's half Sioux. My great-grandmother was part Canadian Cree. My brother was the superintendent of schools on the 48th Indian Reservation in North Dakota for 7 years, and my sister Joyce taught at the Assiniboine Sioux Tribal Headquarters in Poplar, Montana for many, many years. I'm going to get into a few notes here real quick, and then I'll get on with my testimony, in which I do support the bill. Most of my grandmother's people were killed when Chief Black Eagle declared war on the whites for trying to overrun their reservation in southern Minnesota. The family then was scattered across the reservations in North Dakota and South Dakota, and a few winding up on the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana. So with that said, I think it's pretty clear that I'm certainly not pro one class of people or another, being part a mixture of a little bit of everything. And I'm certainly not pro-rural or pro-urban. When I came up here in the winter of 1968, we had lost our tribal grazing land on the Assiniboine Sioux Reservation, and I had my first leader coming up here for taking a job as a ranch foreman on a 30,000-acre cow ranch on the Shoshone Reservation at Fort Washakie, Wyoming. And that brings up an interesting question that I would hope would answer your question, Senator Lincoln. Where do we go from subsistence? When Chief Washakie went back east and looked to see how many people there were back there, he came back out and told the Shoshones, "You must learn to live like the white man, or you will be passed by and covered up like the graves of black grass by the whippersnapper." But the Shoshones had always agreed with or worked with the whites, and they have one of the richest cattle ranching empires in the state of Wyoming. I have a very good friend of my own down there who is half Blackfoot and half Sioux, who is now the chief or the president of the Assiniboine Sioux Tribal Grazing Association. And I can remember when Jim and his wife were practically starving to death trying to live a subsistence lifestyle. He now runs 2,500 head of cows of his own and makes more net money per year than he would see gross in 10 years when he was living a subsistence style. I think it's time to get beyond subsistence. I think it's time to take the people in rural Alaska into the 21st century with moose ranching, with farming, with village industries, with tourism, or with anything that we can possibly do to find a better lifestyle. And it can be done without destroying the culture of the people. I think that people need to think beyond subsistence, and I'm going to go on record here as supporting Beverly Massick for having guts enough to stand up and look beyond subsistence and into the 21st century, because time is not going to wait for any of us. For 9 years, I flew from Hughes, Allakaka, Latina, Biddles, Evansville, Wiseman, Porcupine, Chandler, Lake Chalkeetsik, Fort Yukon, Wiseman, Birch Creek, Beaver, and Stevens Village and Rampart, and took care of your 40 years ahead of us need to catch up. I used to stay in Walt's father's cabin, Durock Newman's cabin at Beaver many of the times when I was there. And I'm just going through here real quick to see if I missed anything that I wanted to point out. But I'm going to get on with some facts here that I dug out. One of them is that, in going back to what Philipsic, the color here, said, you know, our land that we started trying to develop in 68 was tied up during ASCA. It was tied up again from 71 to 75 when the four-year extension for the final ASCA land settlement was extended to give the Native people of Alaska four more years. It was again tied up from 75 until 78 in the Rogers C.B. Morton lawsuit. When Morton changed the classification of that land, D1 to D2, and tried to run the gates of the Arctic National Park over the top of it. It was again tied up from 1978 until December 2nd of 1980 in Anilka. And I think probably rightfully so, the people that made the comment that Anilka should have been called the Lawyers Guaranteed Employment Act is true, that there's going to be lawsuits going on over that thing for a long time. And we're still suing the state trying to get title to those lands that we had patent rights and homestead rights and oversight rights and ITM sites on as far back as 1968 when we first began trying to develop that land. Subsistence is probably the most divisive, divisional, un-American act that ever came out of the American Congress, at least in the way that it was written. Under Article 1, Section 10 of the United States, the state of Alaska clearly and unmistakably is prohibited from participating in the subsistence provision of ANILCA. Section 10 of Article 1 of the United States Constitution says, no state shall enter into or pass any law that impairs the obligation contract. And the Statehood Act is a contract with the federal government of Alaska, with the federal government of the United States, or between the state of Alaska. It's a solemn contract that by this law, wisely written by the framers of the Constitution, cannot be ignored. It's an act that was created to protect all the people of Alaska and all the people of the United States. That contract also says in Article 8, Section 10, the provisions of the act admitting Alaska to the Union, which reserve the rights or powers to the United States, as well as those prescribing the terms or the conditions of the grants of lands or other property, are consented to fully by the state and its people. That contract was signed by the people of Alaska and the representatives of the Congress of the United States who represented the United States. Under Section 12 of Article 8, the United States and the state of Alaska agreed that there was some question over Native village fishing rights in some areas. Those rights were extinguished in 1971 when Congress passed the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act. And those people gave up their aboriginal claims and settlements of 44 million acres of land and a payment of nearly $1 billion, the largest and most generous settlement ever received by any Native American. As already ruled on and appealed by the Alaska Supreme Court, Section 3 of Article 8 clearly states wherever occurring in their natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for common use. This is a binding contract whose provisions with the United States, in which the United States illegally attempted to violate a binding contract, and it cannot be changed without unilateral agreement of all parties. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
You're
going to
need to wrap it up. Is there a self-closure in the less than a minute? Or give a copy of what you've written, or would you, is it
just... Yeah, I probably wind it up.
Well, okay. we have certainly about 10 more people who want to testify, and we're, I just want to make sure that...
Basically, those laws are what I'm pressing on. I think we need to give some consideration to the grants, the welfare, the food stamps, and the provisions and the state money and federal money that goes to the rural Alaskans. I think we need to keep in mind that under the Equal Footing Amendment, no other state has ever been treated the way that Alaska has been treated. And I think that 15 years of violations of law should come to an end, and that ANILCA needs to be changed, and that we need to get back to equal rights for all people. And I'll give you the rest of this here. Thank you.
Equality and equal access, but it's going to be hard if we have a poker game, everyone can be invited to sit down at the table, but if one person's got $1,000 in their pocket and the other person has $25, that person with $25 isn't going to be in the game for very long. So we have to make sure that we have equal footing if we're going to be at the table equally. And the tribes have never had that equal footing. So this problem needs to be resolved, but for the time being, they need protection, and that's why we wish to oppose SJR 19. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lazy. Heard your mail. And standing by, Donald Stern. Well, this mail is coming. Now, this is my sheet 8 of the sign. Yeah, that's fine. I don't need it yet.
Hi. My name is Marjorie Mayo, born and raised in Stevensville, Alaska. I have been living in Fairbanks for the past almost 35 years. I have not. My roots are back home, and if that's what it's going to be, always. And I can't believe that people are, I have not ripped the bill. I just got the copy and I didn't have time to read it. So I'm just going to be talking about how I feel about the whole situation. I could not believe people talking about the villagers accepting food stamps, money. It happens all over here in the city of Fairbanks. There are some people that do need those kinds of help, and they do get it. And food stamps is not entirely free. The people that have the food stamps have to pay by part of it. I know one person, an elderly person, wanted food stamps to help her out. And you know how much free food stamps he was going to get? He had to pay $250 of his little income that he was getting at the time. And the free food stamp amounted to $10. That's how it is. And that was here in Fairbanks. So for people to say that people out in the villages are accepting food stamps, they do, you bet they do. Because people like you are preventing them from living their lifestyle. And let me tell you, I don't think any of you, with the exception of Georgiana Lincoln, know anything about what it is to live in a village, especially in the winter when it's so cold. Having grown up in a village, there was lots of hungry days. And people did not go out and shoot a moose every time they saw it. So why do you think the animals are still around? When our ancestors managed with our few people, they know just how far to go. That they do not want to deplete the animal because they are thinking of their future generations and also for some other rainy day. But it took the state of Alaska but just not too long to get the renewable resources in trouble. 2-3 summers ago, people had to stop fishing because, in my opinion, fishing was not being managed right. Therefore, there was a shortage, and the very people that depended on us had to quit fishing. And so, for people to say, stuff that they have been talked to Fairbanks. So it doesn't hurt me, but those people in the villages are hurting, and they have every right to worry. But I think there are some young people coming up with educations, and they are using white man's tools also. The people that cutting down the villagers have no knowledge. The person that was up here named a whole bunch of villages. And therefore, he felt he had a right to say the things that he did. But how much does he know compared to my own?
My name is Donald Stein, 105 Dunbar, Fairbanks. I voted for statehood. A gentleman named Joe Boger tried to persuade me to vote against statehood. I asked why, and Joe replied, the federal government will pass laws which will separate urban-rural and native-white because dividing Alaska's people is the only way that it can conquer and control Alaska. I watched the federal government pass laws to that effect with the means to control Alaska, and they do control over 60% of Alaska. At the time of statehood, I thought the people of Alaska could control their own destiny in the state. Was I ever wrong? Subsistence is broached by the federal government accomplishes all this. It divides urban-rural and native-white on only one issue. It does the whole thing, one issue, urban-rural, native-white. Our state constitution guarantees equal rights and equal opportunity. I'm not against subsistence. I favor it. I am against bringing my subsistence rights guaranteed under the state constitution. I'm against losing my subsistence rights guaranteed under the state constitution just because I live in a rural setting. 5 months out of the year, I live on my mine site in a rural setting. Sometimes I use subsistence, sometimes I don't. Recently I've been fairly affluent, and I haven't. As a matter of fact, I really don't like to go out and kill animals at all. I just love animals. The rule of preference in Alaska is unconstitutional. It's against the Statehood Act that I voted for. I may not need subsistence right now, but like I said, I've used it in the past, but I don't want to lose that guaranteed right. I'd like to change ANILCA and not change the Statehood Act. So I'm in favor of this particular resolution.
Definition of public lands to be incorporated in federal law, which will constrain the Department Department of the Interior and other federal agencies from assuming land management authority over lands that don't belong to the federal government. This is not just an ANILCA problem. It is a problem that is evidenced by actions of the Department of the Interior with respect, for one example, to RS 2477 rights of way, in which the Interior Department has sought to be able to extend land management control through control of the use of rights of way across public lands. The Alaska Mines Association is concerned that not only would the Department of the Interior or other federal agency extend land management controls or attempt to do so over state land, but also privately owned land, including Native corporation lands. I've heard a little bit of the debate, and I am extraordinarily disheartened that it has become so acrimonious, and I think what the real, and it has tended to disguise what I think is a real issue here, and that is whether or not the federal government will control all lands in Alaska. I would urge, therefore, that legislature adopt Senate Joint Resolution of 19. I'd be glad to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary, when you said that you don't view this as a subsistence issue for the Alaska Miners Association, doesn't view it as a subsistence issue, but I guess this is what folks are characterizing as a state issue. I just have difficulty with that when we say this isn't a subsistence issue, when the sponsor statement talks about the major ANILCA conflicts as the basis for the resolution. I mean, yeah, the resolution that the customary trade provisions allow for commercial sale of subsistence taken resources that the federal court interpretation that all competing uses must be eliminated before subsistence uses are restricted, that the definition of rural and ANILCA Title 8, it all, I can't read this, and I'm having difficulty with it. I can't read this without reading in that this is subsistence, because we are telling Congress, in fact, in the resolve, we're telling Congress to amend ANILCA, or that would mean all lands navigable, should certainly means giving it back to the state. But that is subsistence, and I don't, I'm just having difficulty not.
Well, there are more parts to ANILCA than just that one subsistence decision, Senator Lincoln. And I think that if you look at what the resolution says, it basically is saying that the Secretary of the Interior and the Secretary of Agriculture are attempting to use the subsistence provision of ANILCA as a mechanism for assuming control over lands in Alaska which are not federal lands.
But are we
and that's why I think resolution is asking for a definition of public lands, which will say, okay, federal government, these are your lands, state, these are your lands, data corporations, these are your lands. And we're not going to exercise dominion over these lands in pursuit of one single objective. I think subsistence can be solved, and I would like to see it solved, but I don't think it's ever going to be solved until we deal with the issue itself,
but
instead of all of the other personal issues.
And I appreciate that, and I don't mean to be argumentative about this at all, but just, and I know that we've got some other folks that are going to testify too, but that when whatever the land situation is, that subsistence is ultimately the reason that we're doing this. We're trying to get that resolved. Someone wants to get that resolved. And so the next step then is subsistence. Whether that's state lands, federal lands, or whatever lands it is, the next step is how do we define then subsistence? So I might be the chicken and the egg.
Well, I understand what you're one thing I would urge, and that is that you consider very seriously the problem that the federal government appears to want to assume control, land management control, not fish and game, but land management control over both state and other lands through this type of issue. And there are other issues that are being used.
Thanks for
joining us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Warren Machmiak, and then Roxanne Frank.
Thank you. On our way to Fairbanks today, I scribbled down the first thoughts that came to mind, so later on we'll be submitting a written testimony rather than to the mayor of signature. But my name is Warren Buttermilk, and I am an elder, and this is what I'm writing on the plane. We are all Alaskans, but Alaska is so big that it has different groups of people. I am an Inupiaq elder from Barrow, and subsistence to me is a way of life, which includes food, native food, which we in the past cannot go without. For instance, blubber, whales, oobrooks, and seal provides oil on the table for dipping frozen, uncooked whale meat, frozen oobrook meat, some terrible meat, some walrus meat, and a variety of uncooked frozen fish. If you do not know the word for the uncooked frozen food and does not eat it, you are a completely different Alaskan than I am. Some of our people depend on the animals we harvest for store-bought food and to pay for their monthly bills. They carve ivory from walrus tusk in their baskets from Pelvilleen. Even so, mittens and boots from seal skins. They also make hunting boots from caribou legs and make masks from caribou skins. They also cover our Eskimo dance drums from caribou skins and whale liver membrane on their stomachs. If you don't do any of the above, then you have a completely different lifestyle than mine. I have friends in Alaska who have different lifestyle than mine. I guess they'll call themselves subsistence hunters too. These people will hang the disappointed looking animal skins and animal heads on the wall and show some sort of satisfaction of having killed the animal. These friends of mine have a completely different lifestyle than mine. I will say one thing though, which should make everybody happy, as long as equality is concerned, that we share equal amounts of permanent fund dividend checks, which originated from our subsistence hunting grounds. I thank you for allowing me to speak.
Mr. Dumas, you have received the one and only spontaneous applause for all our testimony. Roxanne Frank and Carol Gill.
Hi. Okay. My name is Roxanne Frank. I stay here in Fairbanks. I'm a registered voter in Fairbanks, but I'm originally from Midtown. And I do not support the SJR 19. When I was living in Midtown, I had to leave Midtown to go to school because there was no high school in Midtown. We moved from the old village on the Tanana River in 1970 to the new site. And the reason why I do not support this is because in 1971, without the input of village of Minto, they built a road. When the moose hunting season came around in September, Labor Day weekend, transport from Anchorage or Fairbanks is high. They are now paid for housing, not all BIA housing. They are paid for their housing that they built. They have to pay for oil. They have to pay for electricity. Long ago, they used to just build their own house and live off the land, but we know it's different. But you have to consider how the rural preference, it is important to the rural area. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol Gilman and then Pat Fox.
Senators, appreciate your time. I've heard a lot of, I'm Carol Gilman. I was almost born in Alaska. I've spent almost 65 years here in Fairbanks. So I think I qualify as an elder. I'm older than most of the people who have testified.
Carol, would you move that mic? There you go.
Okay. I was a member of the Citizens Advisory to the State Federal Land Use Commission. And I will tell you, I have read almost all of the management plans that the federal government has put out for management of resources on federal lands. And I will testify that those are management plans for disaster. They do not take into account that our population is growing, both rural and urban, native and white. Those plans do not allow you to exercise any management alternatives on federal lands, period. You cannot satisfy the needs of a growing population under federal management. So, this bill, I support it, but I'll tell you one thing. It is completely unnecessary if you had a competent judge review ANILCA. ANILCA very clearly defines public lands. It defines it not only in one place, but in three places. And further, it goes on to say that ANILCA does not amend the state constitution. So here we are in a situation where an incompetent judge, or an unread judge, I don't know what you want to call it, has put us into a quandary. I'll make a statement on subsistence. There's nothing in this bill that works about subsistence or this resolution. Absolutely nothing. I've heard some interesting testimony today, but there is nothing that is to the point of the resolution. Subsistence is a phony issue. It was a device, it was a carefully calculated item hatched somewhere in bowels of Washington, D.C. to divide the Alaskan people, and it is succeeding. I think one point in time we have finally recognized that you cannot give special privilege to one segment of the population without causing a lot of problems, very divisive. If you read the U.S. Constitution, not only the state of Alaska Constitution, but if you read the U.S. Constitution, the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution says that we're entitled to equal rights under the law. Congress can discriminate. The state of Alaska cannot, and nor should we. We should not discriminate. If we utilize proper management of our fish and game resources, and since we have talked about subsistence to a great extent, if we utilize proper management, we wouldn't have a subsistence issue. It's only when we do not utilize proper management that we begin to have a game shortage. We have to first dispose of one myth, and that is that Alaska is an easy place for game to live. It's a harsh, tough climate. Game is very severely stressed to survive, as are the native people and the rural people who actually truly live a subsistence lifestyle, not the people who get, enough said on that issue. But it is actually would be beneficial to the game. Right now, the game animals are being stressed because it's tougher for them to get the food source. As the deciduous trees grow up, it gets harder and harder for them to gain the nourishment. I have lived in Alaska for a long time. I've prospected. I've been out in the countryside in the wintertime. And I can tell you, in the interior of Alaska, the tundra areas, the conifers, the black spruce areas, are virtual deserts. It's only until you get into the deciduous trees that you find any game at all. If we're looking for game, we're going to have to do some active management, both in predator control and in forestation. Thank you.
Grips with that ourselves.
several places where they have mismanaged it.
And that's worse. A quick question from Senator Alford, then we're going to have to move on.
Yes, sir. I had a comment on the question of Senator Dendry. You know, our Constitution says, subject to the preference among beneficial uses, what we've got is an unconstitutional classification of users. And there's a big difference in those two things. The subsistence preference for uses could have been accomplished under our Constitution without any problem.
If
the federal government had done it that way instead of unconstitutional classification of people.
Ed Fox, Shirley Sager.
Hello, my name is Ed Fox, and I live at 2210 Franklin Street here in Fairbanks. I'm coming to speak to you as a resident of the state and also a member of a tribe that is from the lower 48. And I think I strongly oppose this resolution as it's stated for a couple of reasons. And one of the things that I wanted to say is that when I was a kid, the state of New Mexico and the state of Arizona was fighting over our land and is getting access to it for different economic interests. Our reservation kept getting smaller and smaller because of it. The federal government management of our land is really a trust that made it so that we could fight back and say, no, you can't take. And that allowed us to get back some land that was given to Army captains who retired as ranches. I've worked in Alaska here for several years and worked with a lot of Native tribes on sovereignty issues. And I think this whole bill neglects that issue, is that Native communities are sovereign governments. They manage their land in a different manner. And I think, our tribe in New Mexico is managed through the Self-Determination Act and recognition as a tribe, which people, they have gained. They've been able to develop their own fish and wildlife departments. They manage their wildlife very nicely, and I think tribes are headed that way here in the state. And this, like I said, this cuts it down to either being state or federal land. Federal management of fish and game also includes holding in trust and giving the tribes the right to manage their own fish and wildlife, and that's something that never gave up. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. I apologize for not being here earlier when my name was called. I have some testimony here that I've been asked to read into the record. Three or four of them that were given to me today. I'll only do one. Mary Bishop had planned on speaking on Saturday. She had other commitments today and asked me to read this a few days ago for her. Thank you for allowing my testimony to be read by Shirley. My name is Mary Bishop. I'm a 34-year resident of the interior of Alaska. I cannot be present today due to a commitment I made 2 months ago. I urge you to pass SJR 19. As I see it, resolution does not ask for any major amendments to ANILCA. It is, in its essence, a technical amendment, simply asking Congress to clarify what they passed in the first place. Public lands are defined in ANILCA. They are not defined to include private or state lands and waters. The legislative record of ANILCA makes it clear that the federal government's authority under ANILCA to set seasons and bag limits is very limited, in fact, probably non-existent. It certainly is non-existent on private or state lands and waters. Therefore, there are active judges which fill in some statutory gaps and allow Katie John case that opposes federal management of our fisheries. Passing SJR 19 should not be a particularly controversial issue. It seems unlikely that many residents of Alaska want the heavy hand of the federal government reaching any farther into our management of our fishing game than they already are. I urge you to pass SJR 19, and I encourage our congressional delegation to move forward with it in much the same manner as they have done in the past with the many technical amendments to ANILCA they have sponsored. I thank you for letting me speak, and I applaud you for your endurance for being here all day listening to this testimony.
Thank you, Mrs. Sager. Reverend Rosa with Michael Dubowski standing by.
My name's Robert Rosa. I'm not very well prepared. I don't have a prepared statement. I was just arrived recently and started jotting down some notes as I got here. I don't know very much about law, and I've never testified in a proceeding like this before. I've been hearing a lot of talk in about the 45 minutes that I've been here about equal rights and equal access. I'm hearing this from men and women who are clearly a member of a majority race, of people who have access to more means, who have a different definition of quality of life than people who I see and know who live in rural Alaska. I'm a newcomer to Alaska. I arrived 15 years ago. I've been through some tough times and some easy times materially since I've been here. And yet I'm privileged. I'm a white. I'm male. And that puts me in a privileged class in this country and in this state. I never had to worry about making money or finding ways to make money, perhaps not only because of my race, but because of my educational background and whatever else I brought with me. I can sit behind a computer and make money that way, or I can go out and cut firewood for people and make money that way. I have a lot of choices in how I'm going to gain my livelihood here. One of the reasons why I was late today is because I didn't, for one thing, I didn't realize this was going on. I was gaining my subsistence. I was sitting behind a desk, and I left work early, and tomorrow's payday, and the check will be in the bank. So I went to Cars, and I went grocery shopping, and I went home. That's my subsistence. That's my subsistence lifestyle. That's my lifestyle of choice. Since I came to Alaska in 1980, I've spent a great deal of time in Alaska. Spent time in dozens of villages, I've lived in villages, and I've interviewed dozens, if not more, Native elders about their lifestyle. When they talk about their land, or the land, they're talking about subsistence. You never hear them talk about a historical place, or a burial ground, or anything like that, without talking about the resources. It's so intertwined. I don't think there's those of us from this culture have a real serious grasp of what's going on in villages. I was recently out in the village of Makoriak, and numerous times when I go out to the village, I ask people, I see my time is up and I'll finish up here quickly. I ask people, can I bring you something? And one time a guy asked me to bring him a splitting log. But other than that, every other request I've gotten to bring things out to that very remote village was for food. Could you bring us some fruit, some fresh fruit? Could you bring us some fresh vegetables? And when I go to the store in the village, I see the options for food are so minimal that I have to bring all the food. I would need to bring all the food that I choose to eat if the people out there didn't choose to feed me. And they fed me well, and I had lots of meals in the villages to the point where people thought my hair was going to start turning black. this by saying, if you unify people by mere material means, which seems to me what you're talking about doing, you're talking about some kind of unification thing, that doesn't really cut across cultures. You divide them in spirit.